Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And today, it's one of my very favorite topics of all time.
I have to agree with you, Tony. I like this topic.
You agreed with me.
I know, it's unusual.
It's amazing.
I always agree with you, Tony.
Beans, beans, beans.
We love beans.
I'm saying it three times.
Beans.
Because
of the
great love.
Sometimes called peas.
Beans.
But they're still beans.
Well, we got to get into all that.
Yep.
So what's a pea and what's a bean? Let's talk about the nature of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, but I do know that I use something called Sea Island white rice peas, and they are a bean, and they are amazing.
Why are they not called white rice beans?
I don't know. Probably because they're little and they have eyes, but they look like peas instead
I wonder who
traditional
made these
beans.
Decisions.
I don't know. I actually don't even really care. I have to be honest.
Is a peanut, the thing that occurred to me thinking about this program was, is a peanut a bean?
It's a nut, isn't it?
Well, here called the ground nut.
Oh, God. Yes.
I literally don't know.
Oh, well, if you don't know the answer question, why did you ask it?
Because I wanted to know.
All
if there's
right.
a
now
peanut expert out there and you want to email us.
Yes, please.
ForemanWolf@WIPR.org. And if you can clarify, in our second segment, maybe we'll get the answer to that question, because we've got an interview with Ian Zaletsky from Richfield Farm, who grows a lot of beans.
Yeah, Ian.
We get a lot of beans from him.
Gosh.
And maybe Ian knows the answer to that question.
I just came from my kitchen, and we just roasted some of his corn that came in today from the field, and it just came out of the oven before I left, and I had to eat some of that right off the sheet pan. It was so good. That man can grow some great product.
He does.
And his tomatoes, we got in heirloom tomatoes today, absolutely gorgeous. And where are we? We're in the end of September.
Well,
and
that's, got,
thank goodness for this hot weather we've had this
blast
last.
Of heat, yeah.
Yeah, it's been, you know, as much as I wish it would start snowing outside, I am thankful for that warm weather, because we've gotten some great product.
Yeah,
but yeah,
it'll
be fun
about,
to talk to him about the bean thing.
Well, I want to talk to him about beans, but also the unusual year, the unusual season.
Whew, it's been a crazy unusual season. I know.
Yeah, no question. So, Cindy, how about early bean memories? Did you like beans when you were a kid?
I don't recall having anything other than baked beans, which I absolutely disliked immensely when I was a kid. So I'm afraid we didn't have the opportunity to have fresh beans like we do right now. I mean, honestly, I've been cooking for a long time, and it's only been recently that we've been getting these fresh peas and beans like this anyway. So it's like anything that's fresh versus dried or canned or frozen or preserved, there's nothing like something right out of a field. And I will never forget when you brought me fresh crowder peas from one of our local farmers. I almost cried. I was so excited. That is something that is so important to the history of Southern cooking, and was one of the traditional beans that was used in Hoppin' John, and which is a dish that's been made since the 1700s, and very traditional to the Lowcountry area. And to get those fresh crowder peas, and even when I worked in Charleston when I was younger, there were very few farmers growing crowder peas because they couldn't sell them. Which was, you know, it was before the resurgence of, or the advent of doing, I guess I should say, doing Southern food and fine dining restaurants. You know, before that in Charleston, it was done in little roadside places. It wasn't done in fancy restaurants. So there was no chefs demanding, and I think there were probably just a few enough people that were still interested in those old Southern products that, you know, the farmers just weren't growing them. Or if they were growing them, they were growing them for their own consumption. So, you know, that's, to me, you talk about childhood, the biggest difference from childhood is that we have all these amazing products that we can get that are fresh now.
I know for me, beans were always out of a can, right?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, beans were out of a can. And once in a while, if you went to the Latin American section in the grocery store to the aisle, you could go and get dried ones.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, when I was a kid, that's kind of the only way that you could do it.
Sure.
So that's, my great-grandmother would always shop for, you know, black-eyed peas or white beans or whatever it might be she wanted for soups.
You know, we buy our grits from a place called Anson's Mill, and this whole change in farming and the resurgence of Southern cooking and recognizing how important it is to our culinary history. I mean, Glenn Roberts has just done an amazing thing by, you know, growing what we're now getting are called Sea Island rice peas. We're getting, the Sea Islands are a chain of 100 islands that go from South Carolina through Georgia, the coast of Georgia down through the coast of Florida. And I mean, thank goodness there's tremendous Geechee and Gullah history in the islands off of the coast of South Carolina. And those sort of cultures were sort of pristinely preserved because they're such isolated areas. And I know Glenn is having farmers raise these products, but the Petit Rouge peas that we're getting from the Sea Islands are unbelievable. And I was reading about it on their website about the history of that particular pea. I always thought Crowder peas were the ones that were predominantly used in Hop and John, which they were, but also these Petit Rouge peas were used as well. And, you know, what an opportunity. I mean, they just have this great sort of unusual flavor that's almost like mushroomy in a good way and really earthy and almost rich in tone and nutty, like your peanuts. And, you know, I mean, just absolutely gorgeous peas. And they're tiny little eyed peas. They're red, of course. And then he also has Sea Island white rice peas. Oh, my gosh, white rice peas. They're just delicious. So he has worked really hard to bring these things back and have farmers cultivate them. And it's really just, and it's a history from, you know, particularly the Sea Island white rice pea came from Italy. And it came over with Nastrali rice, I don't know if that's how you say it, the seed for that particular type of rice from the Veneto. So it was sort of a combination, because that's what I'm dying to talk to Ian about, is these products, rice and peas, were grown in, you know, alternating in fields or grown together, or, you know, because of whatever the rice did to the land, you know, just having to rejuvenate the land. But I'm curious to talk to Ian about that.
Yeah, alternate to restore nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people just think a bean is a bean, or some kind of a dried pea is a...
As being almost something pedestrian, mean?
Well, just pedestrian.
Which is sad.
And kind of sad.
But that's part of history. I mean, it's fair from the past, but it's not fair now because of what we can buy.
I recall seeing a television episode for Mad Men where they're trying to sell advertising to the fellow from a big company.
Oh, wow.
A big food company, and it's beans that they're trying to help him sell. And even the guy making the canned beans, it's like, have you ever seen beans? They're kind of slimy.
Ooh.
They look like organs.
Oh, no. Oh, come on.
Like, and
wow.
That doesn't occur to me.
No, not at all.
Because I'm used to being like, almost like you can eat them raw, like fava beans, I love raw with a little salt.
For sure.
It's like, wow. So that's the perception of the 50s and 60s and even when we were kids.
Sure.
But things have changed. I think people have also embraced a lot more peasant cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Beans are a big piece of that.
Well, and if you're a vegetarian, you need beans.
Yeah, it's a cornerstone.
A lot of diets that people are on now or lifestyles of eating choices, you need beans in your diet. So there's a lot more. I bet there's a lot more demand. That would be an interesting thing to find out. What is the demand change in beans since the 50s, 60s, 70s?
I think probably huge. Not for canned ones.
Right.
You know,
definitely not. That demand probably went down quite a bit. Oh, it's great what's available.
So, Hop and John, but that's not something your mother made.
No, my mother didn't cook that way.
Like, bean cakes are something I love, but nobody made that for me.
Mm-mm.
I sort of feel like a lot of doing things interesting with beans or making them part of interesting restaurant meals, that's entirely this generation, the last 20 years.
Sure, absolutely.
So what do you think is the sexiest thing you've ever done with beans in a restaurant?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I have to say,
I mean, I'm looking for sexy.
Okay. I love lentils from the Auvergne, the green French lentils. Okay. They've been grown for over 2,000 years. Seems like a good idea to use something that's been grown for over 2,000 years. And one of the characteristics of the green French lentil from Puy is that when you cook them, they don't really lose their shape. And that is extremely desirable because that's one of the sexy things about beans is having the solid shape of the bean in your mouth on your palate. You know, kind of rolling around in there, circles, whatever. Whatever shape they are, little ones, big ones.
C'est la texture.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you, Tony. And so therefore, you know, I think the real thing about working with beans is understanding how to work with them. And that's really what we need to talk about, and we will. But the biggest thing is, do I soak them? And if I soak them, how long do I soak them? And also, I mean, it drives me crazy if I see a cook open a box of beans and they don't wash them really well before they soak them. So that's another thing. You have to remember where they're coming from.
Let's do bean basics. If they're dried and if they're fresh.
If they're fresh, you're just washing them. You're taking out of them out of the shell. And oftentimes, you know, the shells are pretty dirty, so you're going to have residual dirt from that. So when you're cleaning them, working with them, taking them out of the shell, just make sure you put them, I put them in a container, and then I wash them really well in cold water. It's simple. And always, whenever you're washing something that, you know there's dirt in the bottom, don't pour that water back out. You lift the product out and then rinse out the bowl. Do it again until you see clean water. Once you have clean water, you know there's no more dirt left. So wash and drain them well, and I might even put them in the colander under some running water just for one more shot of making sure they're absolutely free of any dirt. And then with dried beans, it's almost everything the only thing I can think of that I don't soak overnight are lentils. Lentils cook really fast, which is nice. They are good.
Well, they're so small.
Yeah, they're a good one to work with because of that. Black beluga lentils tend to cook a little bit, take a longer cook time. So with those, I still wouldn't soak them, but just be prepared that they're going to take a little bit longer.
Those sound like extremely fancy lentils.
They are fancy and they're expensive, but they're really beautiful and they're very good. But just go for the French green lentil from Puy in the Auvergne in France. And so with let's say cocoa beans or cannellini beans or black beans or anything like that that's a pretty serious bean, wash them well. Look for any tiny little rocks or anything that's not a bean in there. Discard that. So I usually put them in we say a 2-inch hotel pan. So a big long pan, shallow pan, so you can have the beans really out in front of you and just pick through them quickly, and then soak them overnight in the refrigerator in ample amount of water. You want to have probably 3 to 4 inches of water above the level of the beans, so that they can absorb that. They're going to absorb that water.
So those are basic care of beans.
Mm-hmm.
What is a recipe everyone should know? I mean, because we have Ian coming to talk about growing beans in the second segment. We have a chef's challenge that will probably wear you out completely in the third segment.
I doubt that.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. You sound very confident.
Has a chef challenge ever worn me out, Tony?
Well, there have been a few.
No.
The one with the hot dogs.
Oh, well, that was the dumbest chef challenge
ever.
There we go. That was like the first one. You made me go to a convenience store and get a hot dog. I'm like, that's not a chef's challenge. That's like
I would love to see the convenience store getting one of the hot dogs off one of the rollers.
No, I wouldn't like to see that at all. Nothing against that.
I mean,
but
I love hot dogs.
Not for a chef's challenge. All right. Anyway, all right. So when you're making beans, it basically comes down to, are you a vegetarian or not? Do you eat pork or not? Because I have to say, the first thing I think about is great chicken stock with pork product in it, or a smoked ham hock stock and, a little spice in it. So I'm just going to tell you how I like to make beans. I make a smoked ham hock stock just for a massive ratio, just to really throw you off. I do 15 smoked ham hocks in about 25 gallons of water. And what that does...
So that's about a ham hock for a gallon and a half of water.
Right, but that's not enough. What we do is we end up reducing it down. So I would say if you buy 5 smoked ham hocks and you do 2 gallons of water, that would be really a good start. A little bit of mirepoix, carrot, celery, and onion. Maybe 1 for 2 gallons of water, maybe 2 carrots, half of an onion, and 1 stalk of celery. Just cut those, wash it well, cut the stems off, no roots, peel the carrots, clean it up, and cut it into a large dice.
Just for fun, for people that don't have a giant vessel, is bacon a reasonable substitute for the ham hock?
Yeah. Well, actually, I fortify it with bacon. So I make my ham hock stock first with a mirepoix, and I don't put anything else in there. It's just water and the ham hocks and the mirepoix.
And just the traditional mirepoix,
and
carrot, celery, onion.
Right, and I cook that for 4 hours, and then I strain that, and then I put it in a big piece of bacon. And that just fortifies it. And if you want, you can do it with chicken stock and the smoked ham hocks, or you could do it with chicken stock and bacon, either way.
And so then you put
Onions and shallots. And if I want garlic in there, I butter poach garlic and add it right when my liquid is ready to go. You want a nice amount of onion and shallot in there, or just onion. You don't have to do the shallots, but definitely onion product. It's been small dice, sauteed in butter. You could use corn oil if you didn't want to have the butter in there. But at this point, if you're using ham hocks, I don't know why we would be worried about a little bit of butter. The broth needs to taste good. Before you add any beans to it, especially if they're fresh. So the broth has to taste really good before you add fresh beans. If you're going to be cooking a long cook time bean, you have a little bit of leeway with that broth, but mostly your goal needs to be, it's a little bit like making rice. The liquid you add to any starch needs to be really good because that's what it's going to absorb. And you want it to absorb the best flavor it possibly can. And, you know, I always add Tabasco to mine. You may prefer a different type of hot sauce. You could always add fresh peppers, spicy peppers of any kind that you prefer. But yeah, I do onion shallot, the great stock, a big piece of bacon in there, and then some Tabasco and let those beans go. Gentle, low heat, no salt. No added salt. You've already got salt in there from your pork product as it is, but you have an issue with salt with beans. They will take longer to cook. They'll toughen up a little bit, so don't add any salt.
So once they're cooked in the stock,
mm-hmm.
let's say you're putting them alongside of a pork chop or something, take them out of the stock?
That's up to you. I mean, the stock will be too thin to add to just a pork chop. If you reduce some of that stock down to a little bit more brothy, almost sauce-like, well, obviously, if you get close to sauce-like consistency, you're golden. But there's a decent amount of gelatin in ham hocks, so if you use the ham hocks, you'll get some consistency in your stock as you reduce it down. If you use bacon, you're not going to. So, you know, you can... The broth... Honestly, I would put the broth and the beans in a bowl and serve the pork chop on the plate with maybe some other kind of vegetable and just enjoy the beans in the broth with a spoon.
So essentially like a great bean soup.
Yeah.
And maybe you garnish that with what else you like.
Right. Well, the other thing is we're working with a lot of local collard greens right now, and this is my current like love thing right now is adding a chiffonade of collard greens to that cooking liquid right near the end, so they not chiffonade, but a relatively thin slice of collards. And I pull the rib out of a collard green, by the way.
So that's the toughest part.
It is, and it's not terribly desirable. So just remove that, throw it away, and you're left with these wonderful, gigantic. Well, I also ask for the youngest collard greens I can get, but it doesn't matter. Just as long as you wash collard greens well, just note that bugs do like collards. So you want to wash them really well, really check them out. But then slice them, kind of roll them and slice them thin, and that added to some beans, especially in that ham hock broth. Ooh, that is some seriously good eating.
That sounds great. Well, when we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, we'll have Ian Zaleski from Richfield Farm talk about beans, growing beans. Maybe he has an answer for my peanut question. All of that and more on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we have
Yay!
A guest farmer.
Hello.
Hi, Ian.
Ian Zaleski from Richfield Farm.
I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you.
This is exciting.
Yes.
It's fun having you here with us.
Yes.
And I just got food from your farm,
yes,
like hours ago.
An hour ago.
Yeah, I'm like,
she's already eaten some of that corn.
I know. We already roasted the corn before I left. And
oh, great.
And I was like eating it before I left. I'm like, oh, you better save me some of this. Don't put it all in the soup.
You want to tell folks where you're located?
My farm is in Carroll County, Manchester, and farming about 50 or 60 acres of vegetables. You can get our stuff at the farmers markets in Baltimore and Towson.
That's great.
So we're talking about beans.
Yes, beans.
You grow some fine beans. How often do you hear that?
I haven't heard it very much lately except from chefs.
From me. I love it.
But
those cannellini beans were so good.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
They were great. I think I'm going to grow many more.
You have to. Those were delicious.
But I started growing beans because Dad grew beans, and he's been growing beans for forever. And when I took over farm, I kept growing the beans.
Good.
No, I always used to get your beans and distribute them to everybody to play with.
Yep, yep.
So that's been good. And you are the guy that actually listened to the call on the flageolet.
Yes. Yes, you told me to grow the flageolet, and I grow them now. Now it's hard selling them all, though, because they yield so much that not everybody wants to take.
They're hard to pick.
It's
a lot of work to pick flageolet.
As many bushels as we get picked, and they take forever to pick.
Yep,
but they are
good.
Delicious.
They are really good.
Oh, yeah.
I like Tony's description to the waiters the first time we served them. Tony was like, so we got these fresh flageolet beans, and the waiters are like, what's that? And Tony was like, they're a green pill-shaped bean. That is a perfect description because that is exactly what they look like. And they are seriously
and
good.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As nutty and bitter as fava beans are, these are sweet.
Yes. Yes, totally.
So with strong meats like lamb or venison.
Yes, I can see that definitely.
Or a bird, you know, squab or quail.
Definitely.
Flageolet are pretty ideal, just in case you want to sell a few more flageolet. That's how you use it. So how many different beans do you grow, and when are they typically harvested? So people have some idea of the calendar
when
of these.
Okay, we'll start with the calendar then, because fava beans would start in late May, June. Then green beans and yellow beans, flat Italian Roma beans. We also had yellow Roma beans this year. And they would be late June, pretty much through frost. Cranberry beans, October beans, however you want to call them.
Mm-hmm. They're awfully good.
They are good.
They, start kind of end of July and get very good in September and October, of course. That's why they're called October beans. Let's see, the cannellini beans and the flageolet beans, they pretty much are ripe. I mean, you can harvest them just whenever you plant them. And I want to make sure that I get a good germination on the seeds, because they're expensive seeds. So I kind of hold them off a little bit till later. If I wanted to, I could plant them earlier.
Okay.
Black beans, we're picking this year. And I think they're better this time of year, too. They need a little bit more heat, a little bit drier. Oh, and I had yin and yang beans and yellow eye beans, I think they're called.
Ooh.
Yin and yang
You did
beans.
Or you do?
We did.
Oh, I missed that. How did I miss that?
We didn't have very many.
Oh, okay. All right.
We didn't have very
so
many.
Is there something particular about the soil for the bean that you need, or what's the story with
growing them? I think where we are, I have great soil for it, because we have good growing soil, but our ground's a little bit heavier, so we can hold some moisture when it rains. But we also, I kind of usually tend to plant them on a sloping, on a good slope, so that they never drown. But we're also not sandy soil like would be on the Eastern Shore, and because I would think, I think it tends to, they tend to dry out and get too hot too quickly.
Yeah, we've gotten some beans from the Eastern Shore, and they're totally different than the ones that you grow.
Totally different, yeah.
And totally different varieties do well there than do
yes,
well here.
Yeah, yeah. Especially more of the shelling beans and stuff like that.
You see lima beans and that kind of thing.
So what is your soil?
It's more of a limestone soil. Just good heavy soil, a little bit of rocks to allow for drainage.
So, well, and you, topographically, you do have a bunch of slopes.
Rolling, yeah. We're
that's
pretty
nice.
Rolling. Yeah.
So that's interesting, because I tried to grow fava beans this year for the first time in my garden, and they all turned black and awful, and they looked like they were doing okay, and then they all died on me. And
you
I wonder
probably,
if they drowned.
You probably planted them too late.
When do you plant them?
As early as you can plant them.
Ah, okay.
Because they will take a frost.
It was June.
Yes. So we plant our fava beans, get planted. Mm. We tried to plant the last week in March.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. All right. That's good to know.
Give us a minute worth of history. You said your dad always planted beans. You want to give us a little minute history of Richfield Farm?
Sure. Back in the 80s, my father started farming as a side job to school teaching. He had a ready-made workforce of all his students. And one of the easiest things for him to grow and actually have people picking were string beans and yellow beans and things like that. And at the time, he was strictly wholesaling to grocery stores and small markets and things like that, mostly down in the D.C. area, Prince George's County, Montgomery County. I think a lot of those stores are out of business now. This was a long time ago. We always did very well selling them at the farmer's market, especially with the large Italian community here in Baltimore. We sold lots and lots of Roma beans. We sold lots and lots of the cranberry beans. Mm. 20, 30 bushel at a time at the market. People would come in and truck them out.
Wow.
So I've cut back a little bit on some of those beans, but we kind of grow more varieties of beans now.
That's my next, that's my question, and this is a little off topic, but I'm kind of curious. We've been here now for 23 years, and I'm just curious what you have seen change in the market, how the market has worked, you know, the 183 or, you know, wherever it is that you go. What has happened since you, your dad and you have been going to market?
In the 30-some years that I've been involved, the market's shifted in volume. It's much less volume sales, whereas instead of buying a bushel of beans, people are buying a quart of beans.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot more boutique-y oriented.
It's very much,
but
yes.
It's individuals rather than, like you say.
Instead of people buying up large quantities to can and freeze, they're more interested in buying a box, a small box every week and having very fresh beans. And then kind of when beans are out of season, they'll be almost satisfied that they've had enough beans. That's the main change.
That's interesting.
Yes.
What about volume? I mean, do you, is the volume the same for you or?
The volume is nowhere near the same. I mean, we might sell 15 bushel of beans total now at the market. Oh. Whereas we used to sell 15 bushel of Roma beans at the market 30 years ago, 25 years ago.
Well, people eat out an awful lot more.
Yeah, one. People are eating out all the time.
True, and people can
buy
cook
prepared
less at
foods
home.
All the time.
You know, I mean, my family, the ladies all canned and preserved, and that was huge, and got together to do it, and helped each other, and neighbors would come over and do it, and that's the volume that you're talking about.
Yes.
Because it was a big job to preserve all that food.
I still give away quite a few bushels of beans around my home to people, and for free, and they can them, and I get half their canned
beans. Oh, that's
beans.
Nice.
That's great. It's a great cottage industry.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I like that. Good for you.
Good arrangement.
Yes.
So let's change gears for a second just because we have you. This year has been a really weird season.
Yes.
This spring, summer, and now getting into autumn. So have you seen another year that had this kind of weather pattern?
I have personally never seen 60 degree August.
Oh, that was unbelievable.
With rain.
But you have 90 some odd degree late September.
We've had that's
Which
I've seen
sometimes.
Before, and you know, that's fine. I mean, that's typical sometimes. And it's making things very nice. I mean, the tomatoes, this is the best time of the year for tomatoes right now because we've had more hot and we've had more dry weather than we've had all summer.
Those tomatoes you brought me are gorgeous.
They're beautiful.
I'm like, oh my God, this is so exciting. We don't normally have tomatoes end of September.
But
do you have
so
a bunch
happy.
Of aromas left? Or coming
Not,
up?
We have some.
He brought cherries and heirlooms.
We have some. You know,
I'm just thinking about one more round of sauce. Because, you know, we usually get 10, 20 cases from you to shot to make sauce. So,
if somebody selfish. Needs it, yeah, I mean, we have been picking. I picked a bunch of San Marzanos last week. We didn't even sell them. I mean, we're just.
Call, we'll buy
them.
Those are the Holy Grail tomato from
you. Oh, yeah, I'll totally
know,
buy those.
Bring
them on down.
Now.
They're just sitting at home. I think I threw away some of them.
We can all make sauce.
Yeah, but the San Marzanos are for me.
Oh.
Selfish. But, yes. You know, we've never had beans this good in August. Because usually August is so hot and dry, beans get very rubbery and flimsy and seedy very quickly. And this year, they were extra crisp, slow growing. We were almost picking string beans that looked like haricots. I mean, they were so small and so sweet because it was so cold. It was like end of October beans. But It's definitely been different, but it was great for it's great made all the broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage and cold crops for the late fall grow
yeah that was
beautifully
all, well good
that was all early
that's good
and
good.
And now it's gonna and I mean it's a little dry now but it's gonna get cold again
and this, is the cheddar cauliflower is that something you've always grown or is that a new thing
that
or?
Started out maybe 15 or so
okay,
years ago
okay
it's kind of almost standard now.
So the cheddar cauliflower, is that, you're not talking about
it's orange
with Velveeta, cheese on it.
It's orange cauliflower, and it is so pretty to plate with. We did a pan-roasted sea scallop last night with a combination of white cauliflower and the cheddar cauliflower, which I hesitated to put the word cheddar cauliflower on the menu. But, oh my gosh, I didn't hesitate to put the product on the plate.
Yeah.
And it, they're so pretty.
And then you add the purple to it.
And tastes so good. I know, and you brought me purple today. I'm excited to add that. That's going to be fun.
Hopefully next week or so the Romanesco
purple
will start too. And that would be
And that's such a cool
shape.
That
should be really
shape
good this year.
Yeah.
That's such a cool shape. I love that.
If we get rid of this hot weather, you know, if it sticks around. But I think the weather's going
to break here. I think it's supposed
here
to cool down next week,
this
right?
Weekend. I think coming this weekend.
Yeah, 70s and 60s, yeah. 50s. I saw even 50.
Yeah, head. That's already started dropping. Yeah. So.
Of course, that's probably not good for you. But, oh, wow, wow, wow.
Yeah, he's not looking for a freeze.
No.
He's looking
for
nice, long,
nice,
mellow, cool
nice
autumn.
60 degrees and 50 at night.
And you talk about August. I have my 53rd birthday in August on the 25th. It has never been 70 degrees on my birthday. Not anywhere that I have ever lived in 53 years.
Usually it's miserable.
Yes. It's usually 90 or 100 degrees.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is the best birthday I've ever had in my life. It's 70 degrees
outside.
Was the
outside best birthday?
It was, because that's how much I like it when
did
it's
you get
cooler
a cake
outside. I don't like hot. No.
Oh,
I don't
geez
like hot birthdays.
Ian, we got to get her a cake.
No, you don't.
She's the chef.
You brought me tomatoes
what
and,
kind of cake
and,
you want?
And orange cauliflower. That's all I need from Ian. No birthday cake.
All right.
Maybe
cauliflower cake.
That doesn't sound very appetizing.
Anything
thank
you see upcoming, things you're anticipating for the rest of this year, or things you're going to do differently next year because of the season?
Well, I think Chef asked for some Crowder peas.
Oh, yes, sir.
Or some black-eyed peas.
Oh,
some
I'd be so happy.
Some of each.
Crowder over black. Yeah.
How about some chickpeas?
Oh, that would be great.
I looked at getting some of those this year, and I guess I can try and grow them next year.
Well, I need you to grow fava beans for me for sure, since I'm a big failure with my fava beans.
Well, that's a given, because nobody else knows how to do it like I do.
I love those things.
This year it got a little dry and hot right when the favas got ready, and so it kind of knocked a whole week of the harvest out.
Your corn is so good. Do you think it's, I mean, is it, it's you, or is it the soil, or is it
it's
your, you
the
know,
soil, and it's this,
it's just
this
your
time of
climate
year. It's this time of year.
My goodness.
You get some cool nights. It makes everything sugar, you know, brings the sugar out.
Okay.
You know, people should not start canning in July. They should wait until September and October. Get it before it freezes, because it's the best. It's the sweetest.
Okay.
Yeah, real harvest time.
Yeah.
Ian, I have a very difficult question for you.
Sure, no problem.
Ian's up to the task.
Beans and peas, I've eaten a lot of different kinds.
Yes.
I love peanuts. Peanuts are not nuts, right? They're
peanuts are in the legume family.
So they're
beans
they're
are also
to
in the legume family. So they're all
so they're
cousins.
Bean?
They're not a bean. They're a legume.
Thank
you.
You.
Think
but
broader.
They're all legumes, right?
Yes.
Is it pea?
That would be a legume as well, yeah.
So you're not going to give me an answer?
No, it's close enough. I gave you the close enough answer.
This is just
that's
the
as
worst
far as
thing
I know.
I think Ian should be on the
grown
show
I've,
with us
and
every
I've grown peanuts,
week
so I mean,
all right. Well, we're done with you, Ian Zaleski from Richfield Farm.
I love you, Ian.
Thank you.
I'm personally
thank
done
you
with you about that. That's really extra frustrating. Thanks for coming on the program.
Ian,
thank
you
for having me.
Oh, it's so good to see you.
When we come back on Farmer Wolf on Food and Wine, it'll be time for a few more bean recipes. And then a very stressful chef challenge for Chef Cindy Wolf on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And I'm Chef Cindy Wolf.
Sure you
Tony
are.
Tony makes me laugh.
Sure you are.
That was fun having Ian on. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad he was here. He is so great.
It's good to have a capstone on our bean discussion.
Yeah, right.
So we're talking about
good to have somebody around that knows what they're talking about.
Yeah, well, he grows
that's
magnificent
so
beans
awesome
among other products.
Yep.
So it's all beans today.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're full of beans, Tony.
Wow. I was going to try to control myself on all the all the messages and all the songs that had to do with beans, but it's hard to do for the 9-year-old that I actually am. So let's move forward. Let's talk about maybe one or two recipes for beans.
Hop and pop, as we call it in the restaurant. or Hop and Juan, which is really Hop and John. God.
So the recipe is Hop and John. Stop fooling around.
H-O-P-P-I-N, you know, John. Yeah, Hop and John. Huge history in the South. So we already talked about the fact that there are a couple of different beans that were used to make it. And the idea of Hop and John is that it is the most simple of all the Perlo dishes that are traditional to South Carolina. Perlo is a one-pot dish. It can be as exotic as having mussels and clams and shrimp and fish and all kinds of great expensive seafood in it, or it can be as simple and humble and delicious as a bean and rice dish like Hop and John. So the idea is that you would make the beans how I suggested earlier, you know, a good piece of fat back or bacon, some onion product, maybe a little bit of garlic if that's your thing, but good stock, great flavor, black-eyed peas, Crowder peas, the Petit Rouge peas, all of these, well, especially black-eyed peas are fast cooking beans. So you have to keep an eye on those. Because one of the things that you enjoy about a bean, as we talked about before, is that when they remain solid, you don't want the bean bursting apart, breaking up, falling apart. You don't want to cook them so long that they've lost their structure.
What kind of rice do you like best for Hop and John?
Just regular rice, regular straight white rice, short grain. You know, so it doesn't have to be something exotic. Now, you can make it with Carolina Gold. Now, that would be, you know, that's a whole new endeavor or different idea, and you need to know how to cook rice to do. I mean, you have to know how to cook that particular type of rice.
So for black-eyed peas, would that be a good timing matchup for just regular long-grain white rice?
Sure. Yes.
So that might be the simplest way to go about it.
Right. Well, you make the black-eyed peas first. So you cook the black-eyed peas in this wonderful broth that you've made, and near the end of their cooking process, you add the rice to the pot. That's it. So that the rice absorbs all that amazing broth, but obviously you have to have the right ratio of broth to rice. And it's quite simple. Two fingers above the level of the rice, two fingers going horizontally. That's how much liquid you need to have above the level of the rice and the peas to have the proper amount of liquid. And, you know, make sure at that point that there's some salt in there. So there may be enough salt from the bacon or whatever sort of pork product, smoked and cured pork product that you had used to make your black-eyed peas or Crowder peas or field peas, whatever you want to use. But just check the broth, taste it. If it's salty enough, you're good to go. Add the rice, cook it, bring it up to a boil, pop a lid on it. Throw it on the back of the stove, turn the heat off. That's it. Hop and John. Traditionally served on New Year's Day with collard greens.
And so it's really just rice, peas or beans, onion, and a little bit of pork, and bacon or something.
And I always put Tabasco. So some sort of spiced pepper vinegar.
One of the best simple things to do here, I think, is to, if you have a nice piece of rockfish in season, grill that piece of rockfish and lay that down on some Hop and John.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, man.
Oh, please, yes. Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. I just love fish and
rice.
It
needs no sauce. It needs no, you know.
No, that would be so good. Yeah, exactly. That's great.
And you can make a little relish with chilies or something.
Oh, there's a million things you could do, but you're right.
But not necessary.
You don't need anything. You're right.
Crispy skin on that rockfish.
Oh, my gosh. No, that's seriously making me hungry.
Yeah, you just need a fat glass of wine, yeah.
Yeah, like what?
Maybe a Chardonnay that has a little oak to it. You know, that's...
A little California,
oak to it. Yeah. Pick up the smoke from the beans and from the grilled fish.
Sounds good.
And have enough power to carry off the
spice,
the good
maybe.
Flavor.
Yeah. Rich pork flavor and the spice.
Yeah.
Cool.
Something from Sonoma Coast.
All right. Should we do it, Chef Challenge?
Are we ready?
Yeah. Here you go, Tony.
What? It's your turn this time.
All right.
It's your turn first. Don't try to jump a gun.
Oh, boy. Okay.
All right. And my handwriting is immaculate on this one.
Right. Butternut squash, jalapeno peppers, fresh black beans.
There's one on top of that.
I don't know what that says.
Romanescu.
Thank you. I just was going to ignore
it. It's part of that handwriting sample.
White corn. Herbs as you wish.
As you wish.
Lamb necks. Ooh, lamb necks, really? Pancetta. Oh, my gosh.
Good.
I haven't worked with pancetta in a long time. Sweet potatoes, which are so good right now. Whole chicken. Oh, this is a good list. Butter.
It's a
great
list.
I don't know what
that
word is.
I made the list.
Is that cream? Did you really give me cream?
I did give
you
cream.
Tony actually gave saffron, cumin, garlic, shallot, carrots, cocoa beans. Oh, God.
This is a make
this
Cindy
is like,
happy.
Yeah.
List.
Oh, my gosh.
I've given you everything but champagne.
Yeah, well, I can provide that. All right. Let's see here. Wow, I'm so excited. And it's such a big list. I don't even know where to start.
So you make a couple of courses. It's okay.
Okay, well, first thing we need to get those lamb necks in the pot or in the oven. Okay, so I'm going to roll those around in a roasting pan, brown them on the outside, a little bit of salt, corn oil, and then I'm going to slowly roast those for probably about an hour and 15 minutes in a 350-degree oven on no convection. Just let them roast for a little while.
When you brown those guys, they'll give off good fat, too.
Mm. And then I'm going to use that pan, because why not? Why get another one out? And I'm going to add some pancetta to that pan, just a little bit of diced pancetta. Now I've got some serious pork flavor and some more fat. And I'm going to add the butternut squash and sort of a large dice, some jalapeno peppers, and I'm going to wash the, because the beans are fresh, I can do this. I can get away with this. Oh, and you know what? I'm going to chop up the chicken, break it down into its parts, break the wings off and the carcass off, and use it for stock, because you didn't give me stock, did you?
Nope.
No. So I'm going to make stock with that. That's going to already be done. That was the first thing I had to do. Now those the thigh, the leg, the breast meat, well, not the breast. I'll just use the thigh and the legs. Add that to that pan. Oh, gosh. And that's going to roast. And then I'm going to add this chicken stock. And then I'm going to add the fresh black beans and cook those. Meanwhile, I will have roasted the white corn and cut it off the cob. I'm going to take that butternut squash out of there, because I'm going to actually do a small dice of the butternut squash and mix it with the white corn. And I'm going to reserve some jalapeno peppers.
Let me back you up for 1 second.
Oh, okay.
I want to make sure it's clear what you have going on in that pan.
Okay.
Because it sounds really good.
Oh, yeah.
So it's
lamb necks.
It's pancetta and chicken.
And the chicken.
Roasted off in lamb fat, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. With some jalapenos.
And the lamb necks all at once?
Oh, yeah. It's all in there. And then okay. I'm going to add the chicken stock to that. And then I'm going to add the black beans to that.
Right.
Because the black beans won't take long to cook. You also gave me cocoa beans, which take a long time to cook. So that's a whole different affair. So that's not happening right now. Okay. So what is a Romanescu?
Romanescu is that Neanderthal-looking vegetable that has pointy pale green.
It kind of looks like broccoli.
Yeah.
Is that what Ian said he grows?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I do know what that is. I'm sorry. Okay. So that's all going, and I'm gonna.
So you're gonna end up with some kind of a stew out of that.
Right. Oh, that's gonna be so good. And then the white corn was roasted, and I cut it off the cob. I'm gonna add that in a sauté pan with the butternut squash, and I am going to reserve a few jalapenos for that, because I'm going to really grill those until they're tender. I've used raw jalapenos thrown in with that whole cooking, braising thing that I have going on, but the grilled ones are going to be part of the vegetable. So that's that. Now I need to cook these cocoa beans. And you know what? You gave me cream. I'm just going to make soup with the cocoa beans. So I'll saute the shallots, the garlic, and the cumin with the carrots and the saffron, which I have to steep in something. So you didn't give me wine, so I'll just steep it in a little bit of water. And I'm going to make cocoa bean soup. Oh, gosh. With that cumin and the carrots. I'm going to put a lot of carrots in there. Yeah, so it's almost cocoa bean and carrot soup. Yes, and then the little, that's going to be good. And so that's the soup. So that's that. And then so you have this wonderful braised dish, and the vegetable is the corn and the butternut squash and the Romanescu, which I'll just blanch off in highly salted water. And then we'll just add that to the vegetables and a little bit of jalapeno. And then you have the soup as your first course. That's fun.
Sounds good.
Thank you. That was a really good list.
You're welcome.
Okay, good job, Tony.
And here we go. All right, let's see what sort of mess you gave me.
What kind of mess I gave you?
Cannellini beans, bacon, red beans. It's a bean festival. Onion, garlic, hock stock, chicken stock. Well, you gave me all the stock.
Uh-huh.
Venison, butternut squash, rice. What is that word?
Collards.
Collards. I thought it was gourds with a C. It was like cords. I mean, I have pants like that. All right. So let's see. What cut of venison do I have here?
The saddle. The whole saddle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty darn nice, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Well, the collards, can I have one of your peppers, please?
Yes. Yes.
The collards I want to cook in the hock stock, reinforced with the bacon, with a little onion, and honestly a lot of garlic. Cooked for a while with one of those peppers as well. And you know what I always do on my plate at Thanksgiving? I always mix the Hop and John with my collards.
Oh, yeah.
I like them together.
Yummy.
So I'm going to cook once those collards are ready to go, mm-hmm. I'm going to cook the rice
yeah.
in that same pot.
There you go. That sounds good.
Okay. And I want that as background for that venison.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to
good earthy flavors.
Season well and roast off that venison rack. I don't have anything to season it with, but if it's nice venison, it doesn't require much. That's for sure.
What would you want for it?
Maybe fresh thyme, rosemary.
Sure.
It's nice to have.
Okay.
Something along those lines. Just something that I can, with oil, with a lot of good salt, rub it down with. Something to interact with the meat. But roast that guy off and then slice chops once it's rested and lay that out with the collards and the rice business. Give me red beans, cannellini beans. So why not put them both together? Let's make a soup. I have the corns. So let's make a soup with the corn and the cannellinis. The red beans, cannellini beans. Let's assume I've saved a little bit of bacon and garlic. Toss that all in the chicken stock. That could be fun. I've reserved the butternut squash because I have to admit something. I don't love butternut squash.
Hmm.
I don't want it as part of the soup, and I don't really want it as part of that dish. You ever made chips out of butternut squash?
No. I don't know. They're kind of
yeah. Sweet
moist.
Potatoes make yeah. Won't happen.
I don't think that would work. Yeah.
Nope. Butternut squash. I'm going to save
maybe
for another day.
Maybe if you did butternut squash puree, since you don't really like it, maybe it's a.
You could. I mean, I can like a soup.
Like
I just when it's its own thing, or if it's kind of chunky or something.
I
it's
love
just
butternut
not my
squash.
Bad.
I love it. When you see it, like if you do a small dice of it and you saute it in butter with a little bit of salt, and you watch it go from being this sort of, you know, opaque to being almost translucent, it changes its properties so much when it cooks in butter. I think it's really, really, really fun.
I think it's just, it's honestly, it's that I don't know that I want all the dairy that it was required to transform the
okay.
the butternut squash.
I
so
get it.
Maybe it could be puree on the plate, but
that'd be good.
No. I think soup and main course.
All right,
same
so
as you.
What wine are we drinking with our chef's challenges?
Oh, well, let's see. With yours, something big American personality.
Like me?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm going to go back to the car and get my waiters. And I do mean hip waiters. Either not a giant red Zinfandel, not super extracted like Fritz, or maybe a Pinot Noir that has a lot of punch to it, like one of the wines from Martinelli. Both are Russian River Valley, and that's what suits, I think, what you have going on. For mine, it could be a really nice, rich Malbec.
Mm-hmm.
It could be Rioja.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, Rioja, like 2004, mm-hmm. 2001, a little bottle age to it.
It's been a long time since I had a Rioja.
Might be,
that sounds
might be
good.
Superb. I don't want anything with that much tannin. The venison doesn't require that much tannin.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs something it can
well,
take
yeah,
on.
Yeah, because there's no fat.
Some of the spice and the smoke.
Right? Venison is so lean.
Mm. All the time in wood the Rioja spends.
Yeah, that's another thing to think about when you're cooking it, too, is just how lean it is. There's no fat.
No. Well, I think we have to go eat this stuff.
I wish we could.
So, yeah. That's all we have time for on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And if you want to download this or any other episodes, our podcasts are available on the WYPR site, wypr.org. Just look for the Foreman & Wolf page. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf or on Instagram as Chef Wolf. And I love followers, so love to have you.
Oh, you have cool photos on there.
Thank you.
My Instagram is The Real Tony Foreman. And if you want to correspond with the program, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. Well, thanks for listening.
And happy Sunday.